Hey, this is Carantella Bass, and welcome to The Hub.
Hi, everyone. It's Carantella Bass, and welcome to The Hub. On my journey on, you know, just evolving as a woman, as a grown-ass woman at 51, there's so many things that you think about when you peel back the layers and think about your experience, what made you who you are, why you act a certain way, why you talk a certain way, why you eat certain things. And for me, I'm Jamaican. I was born in Jamaica. I came to this country in 1973. I was naturalized when I was 17. I voted when I was 18. So I kind of feel like, yeah, I am that chick. I am totally the person that relates to everyone on all levels, being talking about immigration, talking about coming to the land of milk and honey. And my cousin, although she was born in the Bronx, her family moved to Toronto when she was a mere child. And you got to understand that when Caribbeans or Jamaicans came to America, we either went to Canada, we went to England, and then most of us stayed in New York, but we didn't really migrate to the South. But our experience is, what do you say, facts?
Facts.
Mm-hmm. Facts. That's my cousin, Tracy Wessum. She is all of 7 years younger than me, mother of three, ages from 13 to 27, the age range, right, Trey?
Correct.
Married, career woman from paralegal to working in the government. She is that girl when you go to Canada, Toronto, you want to look up Trey. I'm not going to put you on blast because I don't people like, you know, looking out for you, but she is that person. But the really interesting story about us, we really connected on social media because, like I said, we're 7 years younger. So she's my sister's group, right? Or peer. However, watching her or what she was interested in social media, we kind of gravitated towards one another. But there's so many misconceptions when you come from a big family, and our family is pretty big, but we're spread out. So for us as Jamaicans, what we know best is come to this country, work 700 jobs, buy a house, save, fall in, I don't even know about fall in love, get married, and have children, and maybe somewhere between that time, you find a little piece of happiness. Did I sum it up correctly?
Indeed you did. Indeed you did. And you struck a chord with me because I remember a saying, and you may recall this one. A relative of ours used to say, in terms as it pertains to relationships, depending on where you are at, in what stage you're at in your life, you know, you may be with someone out of need and you may be out of someone because that's who you choose to be with.
And that is
real Jamaican right there.
That is real. And the thing about Jamaicans that everybody knows, Jamaicans consider themselves the only island that matters. I hate to say that. We are stuck up. We are conceited. And Jamaica, we're stush. We call it stush. Or you said, Tracy, tapenaris.
Tapenaris.
And here in America, it's bougie, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally.
But where are that? To us, the only island, like I said, is Jamaica. Then there's Trinidad. Then there's Barbados. Maybe Haiti. Mm-hmm. What you said? What else?
There's St. Vincent, there's the Dominica, it is all over the Caribbean.
But we don't factor them in. Like
we don't. Really. And that's sad but true. Because as they say, we run things don't run we.
We run things, right. And with us running things comes a whole bunch of bag of tricks. Because being Caribbean is like being Southern. There's expectations, especially when you're first generation. You're taught you have to succeed. And that drive we carry or pass on down to our children, but also family values. And I know that coming here at six, you know, when I first got here, my mom, my cousins, or our cousins and our families, because it was just a small group of us, we did everything together. We moved together. If you live across the street, I live in the next building. We also had jobs that we got referred to. We had barbecues together. We ate together. But what happened as we got a little bit of success or we made a little bit of money, we wanted to move to Long Island or move to Queens, move from Brooklyn, move to Toronto. And some of that, the family values got distorted. So you in Toronto or moving to Canada from the Bronx, you didn't really know us.
Not like that, as you mentioned, you know, because of the distance. Yeah. Certainly we would get together, you know, at certain occasions and a few times a year to celebrate different family functions and what have you. But growing up here in Canada, I want to point out a very distinct difference with Caribbeans that's zoned in on Jamaicans in particular. The difference I find is that in America, there's a melee, if you will, mm-hmm. of African Americans who have hundreds of years of history in the United States. Whereas in Canada, while Canada does have hundreds of years of history with blacks being here, those blacks who came in from the United States seeking freedom, when immigration started to allow more Caribbeans to come into Canada, it meant that we were coming to a landscape where there wasn't already a lot of black people. So there wasn't that understanding of how to even be in a space with black people, whereas America already had that experience. So it forced Caribbean people, Jamaican people, to really stick together, mm-hmm. really form a community, because we were the outsider, so to speak. And so it was very important for us to, while being in this foreign land, to have an identity and how we would carve out our lives, our careers, our relationships, while still maintaining our Jamaicanness, if you will, in this new place.
Let's go through some categories just so people understand Jamaican culture. So when you talk about cooking, food, because food is the staple of everything we eat. Food is for celebration, it's for funerals, it's for, you know, graduation, it's for every occasion in your life. What you remember growing up Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday or Monday through Sunday was mm-hmm. the food dishes.
Okay, so of course, during the week, you know, it could be, you know, it could be bully beef and rice or bully beef and cabbage.
Right.
It could be something a little more traditional like ackee and saltfish.
Right.
It could be rundown. But of course, some of the traditions that didn't leave us or escape us was, for example, having soup on a Saturday.
Right.
Having several meat kind on a Sunday with your rice and peas and your different salads and your, you know, it was quite the spread. It was, you know, set the table and put out your best cookery. You know what I mean? It was on.
So now, Trey, seriously, a mother of three, a career woman, married. Are you keeping that tradition? Because I know I'm not. I know on Tuesdays, I feel so bad all the time because on Tuesdays, we're doing Taco Tuesdays. And I'm okay. Like, oh my God.
I'm not going to fake the funk. Because I'm a career mother, wife, and have to commute 3 hours a day, there is no time in my world to do that. And I make no apologies. Earlier on in my marriage, I felt like, again, as you said, culturally obliged
right.
to be that mother, be that wife. And then I realized in doing so, I was losing myself because there wasn't enough hours in a day. And so with my partner and I, we discussed, you know, we have to make this work for us. And I think that's what a lot of, as you mentioned, first, second generation Caribbean families, we had to really rewrite the script, because we realized in order for us to make that paper, we had to be out of the home most of the times, unless you were fortunate enough to be an entrepreneur out the gate. You had to be working that 9 to 5. And so to come home and then cook a traditional meal was like next to impossible or very challenging for sure. So typically in my family, if we're not doing meal prep, which is huge right now in our life for not only convenience, but also for health reasons to make sure that we're eating properly, you know what? There are those nights when it is just pizza.
Yeah.
It might be patties, you know, it's going to be takeout, but we do prefer to get our Caribbean takeout.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so Caribbean takeout, I know, like yourself, the same thing, being all that stuff. And sometimes jack of all trades and not enough to everybody, but especially yourself. Mm-hmm. I know that my thing with takeout, and tell me, Jamaican takeout is the most, like, that experience alone can take you from 0 to 100. Because really? I know in New York, when I go into a takeout or a Jamaican restaurant, I got to brace myself. Because mm-hmm. first of all, when you go in, food done. There's never yeah. enough food. And as soon as, if it's a woman behind the counter, she got a major attitude. As soon as she sees you walk in, it's like, so what you want?
And yeah.
Yeah, stew peas done. Yeah, curry goat done. Yeah, so-and-so, it done. Why you have me have a piece of plantain?
Right? And to that, I say this. You can take the Jamaican out of Jamaica, but you can't take the Jamaican out of the people, because trust me, they bring it everywhere they go, and it is what it is.
You have it in Canada, too, in Toronto? Like, when you go to a Jamaican restaurant, they give you more attitude, attitude than food?
Yes, yes. But interestingly enough, as we discuss the topic of food, the next generation now is trying to rewrite the script by doing some more high-end, more dine-in tablecloth and candles and even a fusion of foods. Because again, living here in Toronto, it's quite the, not the melting pot, but more, it's very diverse culturally. And so, for example, you'll have a Caribbean restaurant that is mixed with Italian fare. So we're going gourmet, you know, mm-hmm. so you'll have something like a Rasta pasta, you right. know, you'll have jerk chicken paired with something that's not typically a Jamaican meal. And it goes off very well. You may have a live band playing, you know, so again, not the typical, you know, a hole in the wall type of Caribbean restaurant that want to fix up on a chair of Brookway and, you know, all of that. We want to find a, the next generation is stepping it up and saying, no, we can do fine dining as well. We can do right. upscale. You know, we can allow others to feel comfortable coming into our establishment.
Right.
And you expecting good customer service, because that's important at the end of the day.
It is. You could do oxtail with, you know,
what? Again, pasta.
Oxtail with kale or bok choy.
Yes. Correct. Right. Yeah, they switch it up all the time. It's very interesting, actually. And then, of course, with vegan being such a major thing now, those who perhaps would follow more of a Rastafarian diet that's either, you know, very ital, low salt, yeah. or maybe just fish alone, you know, those are becoming very popular types of spaces now where not only Jamaicans but other cultures are embracing, because it's recognized as healthy.
No, you're right. And I think it's great that the next generation is stepping it up. Let's talk about, since we talked about food, let's talk about family. The whole dynamics of family and responsibilities. When I was a kid, I know my mom was staunch on you doing your chores first. Like, nothing in life mattered on Saturdays. If you didn't do your chores, like cook, clean the bathroom, clean the rooms, you were not doing anything. Like,
you
nothing.
Couldn't step outside.
The world did not start until the chores were done.
Absolutely right.
I look at my daughter now, and my son's at college, and I'm like, they got an easy pass. Because even though they do chores, we put so much focus on other things now, like education, or they need to be able to have culture and socialization, that they don't do chores. They do chores, but not to the extent where we literally had to do chores. And that chores was just everyday chores. Do you feel guilty sometimes if your kids are like just coasting the good life and don't even understand what it's like to honestly earn a good day of like being a kid and doing
and contributing? Certainly, yeah. I can relate, because as you mentioned, in our generation, Saturdays you got up early. There may have been some music playing in the house, whether it be gospel or some, you know, easygoing mellow reggae.
Or Rita Franklin, always, right?
Absolutely. But as you mentioned, chores before anything else.
Right.
Now, by the time I became a teenager by high school, we sort of, in our household, renegotiated those things. And we sort of said, well, do you want good grades or you want the housework
done? Right.
And so now, unfortunately, with my children, what ends up happening, and it's a shared sentiment with my other friends who are parents as well, our children, because they are also very actively involved in extracurricular activities, plus trying to keep up their grades, it makes it incredibly challenging to then also put an expectation on them to have everything crisp and clean all day, every day. So my policy now is I've had to scale back and say, okay, the same way how I can't perform and do some of the more traditional roles, similarly, my children, now all I ask you to do is do well in school, and contribute by keeping things tidy. And on the weekend, yeah, we're gonna turn it up a little bit, but it's not so strict that you can't go to your bed or you can't go to a birthday party or go to the mall if you haven't cleaned every single thing.
I mean, how do you think, and I agree with you because I know now, you know, being grown and watching and watching my brother and my sister, that realistically, you have to choose. Knowing what you went through as a child where you had to do chores, you know, you had to do chores and get good grades, be responsible, be that big sister. Well, you're the middle child. But do you look back now and have resentment towards, you know, your parents, or you just say, you know what, they did the best they could with what they had?
So initially, I went through a phase where I did resent it. Yeah. I felt like, you know, I'm not getting paid to do this. And I felt like you're stopping me from, you know, handling my business because I have to be working to, you know, please you. But then I realized that, you know, a lot of those early childhood experiences built character, discipline, resilience. And it really was, I guess, the beginning of trying to really time manage and setting priorities, because I realize now that all of those things really brought us to who we are today. Yeah. So we can hold it down and wear several hats because we're used to that. Because even if you do by comparison, some of our, some of our peers who are not Jamaican, who are not from our race or background.
Or culture.
Culture, exactly.
Yeah.
We know how to get things done, like I said. And that's one of the things that I'm incredibly proud of as being a Jamaican, because again, you know, we stand for principle, dignity, pride, character, and we want to be the best at everything that we do. So we turn it up a notch.
We turn it up a lot. And I have to say, like, you know, talking to a lot of Blacks, Southern Blacks, there's such similarities.
Yes.
I mean, honest to God, if you close your eyes, because I remember today I was talking to a friend whose father is from the South. And I was just telling her, when I was in Jamaica, and I had to go to Aunt Jessie's in the country, I remember being like 4 or 5 years old, and, you know, we had a zinc pan that she took a bath in, or we all took a bath in, all the kids when they came. We had to go to the outhouse. We had to make sure the well had water. And honestly, when you look back at history, all of this was not that long ago. As Black people, as Afro-Caribbean, whatever we're calling ourselves, African, the similarities, the same, the experiences may be a tad different because of geographics.
But correct.
How do we ensure with our kids that they understand the sacrifice that their ancestors had to actually do and give up, but also how do we keep that burning desire for them to want to try hard and work hard? Because I realize with segregation and then integration, we kind of lost a little bit of edge. And I know as a Caribbean woman, I would honestly say that, because we work hard, yes, but the days of having 2 jobs, 10 jobs, we don't really do. We may have that same job and work more hours. But how do you keep that fire, and how do you instill pride and dignity, but appreciation of the culture and the history to our kids? Because I find like they don't really appreciate it mm-hmm. as much as we did. It was drilled into us, right?
Right.
I'm glad Marcus Garvey, everybody. Nowadays, you ask somebody who's Marcus Garvey, who's Jamaican, they look at you like, Minanoa. Like,
right.
What's that about?
I'm glad you asked that question. And I think there's an onus on us as parents and as a community, as elders, to make sure that our children are immersed in our culture, not only the food, but the music, the language. You may remember Miss Lou and the Anansi stories.
Yes.
And the wonderful poems and our dance and our arts. And by immersing them in it, and you may also remember, slightly off topic, that in our culture as well, because we grew up under the British system in Jamaica, in the Caribbean at large, we had a certain sort of expectation that we were going to do things more of the British way.
Right.
And so there was a generation of us who did things, or, you know, we would say things are proper, talk proper, behave proper. And that properness mimicked what the ruling class did.
Yeah.
However, our generation is sort of saying, well, wait a minute, or not certainly just our generation, even a generation, because if I mentioned Miss Liu, said, wait a minute, we need to take pride in our language, in our culture, in our dance. And so I think that traveling throughout the Caribbean with our children, bringing them to different places, experiences, is really what's going to have them appreciate where they're coming from and where they can go in the future and how they can expand upon things or experiences that generations before went through. If that makes sense to you.
No, it makes sense, because when you said Miss Liu, our grandma named me, everybody in the Caribbean has a pet name. Like, you cannot leave the Caribbean without a pet name. And that's like your nickname. So yes. My name is Karen, but my pet name is Debbie. Mm-hmm. And I got Debbie from grandma watching Miss Liu. And there was a little girl named Debbie Dubai that grandma said reminded her of me. So I became Debbie at that moment. So yes, you got to make sure that you have your culture. You have to make sure that you keep that, you know, brought up see or that lineage, that storytelling, that grill with all of us. But at the same time, I feel although travel is beyond super important, I do think that understanding slavery, understanding our history, understanding how we came on the Middle Passage is really important, because sometimes when you travel, you don't get that knowledge. And a lot of our elders are dying off, so we don't get that story. But I think it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we are carrying down that rite of passage and telling them about our history, what we went through. Because I know a new generation, when I see like new Jamaicans, and I say they're new because they just got here or they were born here, they don't want to have anything to do with Jamaicans. And it's just like, I'm not Jamaican. You know, I don't know how it is in Toronto, but here, every Jamaican wants to be Americanized. And that's kind of sad.
It's the opposite in Toronto. Again, because I guess, you know, our experiences are a little bit different in that a majority of the blacks that you'll meet in Toronto or, you know, throughout the GTA are from the Caribbean. And so it's different when in America you have, again, blacks who have been there for several generations as Americans, African Americans. In Canada, our history didn't start with Caribbean people, of course, but certainly in terms of mass and in terms of numbers, the recognition is really amongst Caribbean people. We identify more with the Caribbean culture. We wouldn't really identify with the Canadian culture apart from how we experience it. And so what I find is that through travel, for example, you can go to different sites where certain slavery things took place. So for example, when I travel with the children, for example, in Jamaica and Duns River Fall, that's an area that had some slave history, and we would look at the plaques and read the different things that were going on. We were traveling through Barbados and St. Lucia and St. Vincent and stuff last year. And again, in the town square, you would see sculptures and figurines. Again, back to Jamaica, where you have the national park, where they have pictures of Paul Bogle and Marcus Garvey and different figures. And you would explain to your children who these people are. And then a takeaway is you can go back home and, for example, watch a documentary on YouTube, for example, that speaks more to what those people were and how they impacted our culture, our race, etc.
True. What do you think about our music is dope. Jamaican music is dope. Like, no matter where you go, we rock, we rule. You cannot go to any place in this country, this diaspora,
in this world,
and not hear One Love. Am I lying? Bob Marley, right?
Truth. I mean, reggae, dance hall, etc., because there is a distinction.
Right.
It transcends all races, ethnicities, backgrounds, etc. And I just absolutely love that. I mean, Jamaica to the world, because you see, music and food bring people together, and any other grouping has done what Jamaica has done for our culture through music. I would like to know about it, because honestly, everywhere you go, reggae music and dancehall music is infectious.
Yes,
it's undeniable. It's infused now in so many different collaborations with artists who have nothing to do per se with the culture. They're just attracted to it. The vibe, the rhythm, the artists, etc. So it's a great thing.
It's really dope. It's great, the fact that, you know, Jamaica, because of our music and culture, has elevated us as people. And that is what you want, is to see a representation. Sometimes not an accurate representation. You know, not every Jamaican sells weed. Not every Jamaican smokes ganja. Not every Jamaican has two-tone hair. Not every Jamaican, you know, is crazy. Most of us are. But, you know, present company included. But we are hardworking, prideful, loving, ambitious people. And at the end of the day, we are so happy to be a part of, you know, what it is in this country, and just be a part of our sisters and brothers across the diaspora, because that's what we are taught at an early age, is that we are one, right? Out of one, many, or is it out of many, one? Which is it?
Out of one is many.
Out of one is many, and that is so true. So what would you say when you talk about, you know, of course dads are always in the picture, but you know, in any true West Indian, Caribbean, Jamaican community, moms are everything. Moms rule, right?
Oh, yes.
So what did your mom tell you or teach you about love?
Oh, that's interesting. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You see, because I think we also came from a generation where that type of topic, relationships, you know, remember, you know, when you're really young, children are to be seen and not heard.
Oh my
and
God.
So yes. It was a situation where you kind of had to figure it on your own. And it's interesting because I think our generation recognized that had we had a little more direction with respect to the same things, we may have made different choices, but certainly during our generation, you couldn't go and talk to your mother. Maybe if you had a cool auntie, you could talk to a cool auntie about, you know, having feelings for a boy, but no, my mother told me absolutely zilch about relationships.
I'm going to have to echo that. Like, my mother told me absolutely zero, negative zero, because my mother had me at 18. So all she knew, all she told me was, yeah, she did tell me something. You better not get pregnant. You better not get pregnant. And, and that was the extent of it. You know, your looks ain't going to carry you too far. Like, honestly.
You better pick up a book. Yeah.
You better pick up a book. You know, you think you're cute. So I think the thing about that, what's sad about that generation is they taught us what they knew. But they did us a disservice, because they focused so much on career and ambition. They did not teach us or empower us as it relates to love and choices.
Yes, and the development of self outside of education.
Yeah, because in my family, in my household, self-esteem was worth zero.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Seriously? Confidence? Like, what the hell is confidence? Like, no, do your chores, read, and get an education. That is the extent of your confidence. Yeah.
Looking cute is not a priority.
Cute? What the heck? No, we didn't even talk about being cute.
Yeah.
My mom, Rosie, was not having that. Like, absolutely not. So I agree with you. What about as it relates to saving money?
Okay, now I love that you brought that topic up, because certainly in our family, that was very, very important, because, you know, as my mother used to say, one cocoa fill basket. So it was a situation where no matter what type of income you were making, you always set something aside first. So when, for example, David Bach talked about Automatic Millionaire and, you know, the cafe latte factor, I said, we've been doing that from ever since. You know, like, we understood that if you wanted to buy that car, your first car, you wanted to buy have a down payment for your first house, again, that meant that you had to save. And so saving has always been a part of our culture. Now, in saying that, again, unfortunately, that legacy is somewhat being diluted now, because I find that as my daughter, for example, is just entering the workforce, she works at McDonald's. And because she's, you know, lives a very comfortable lifestyle, we don't, you know, have any financial expectations of her per se. And we've been saving for her education. So her knowing that perhaps it wasn't a good idea.
Right.
She thinks that everything she makes can go towards buying shoes and clothes and jewelry, et cetera, and makeup. And I did tell her when we opened her account, I said, sweetheart, it's very, very important to save money. Pay yourself first, because at this stage in your life, you don't have any bills or major responsibilities. So now is the greatest. I told her about the law of 72. Make sure that you can do, you know, double your money in no time if you set aside a little bit of money each paycheck.
And my mom, the same thing, you know, she taught me, and you know, our grandmother was like the quintessential Forbes 100 or number one person, because she believed in saving and living below your means and never having credit, right?
So yes.
My mom was like, listen, I can't give you much, but what I can give you is some advice. Whatever you make, you save. You live below your means and you get into a good partner. Because remember back then, the partner or somebody, I think Haitians call it the susu.
Susu, yeah.
Right, where you, a collective group come together and they put a certain amount every week and mm-hmm. you get a draw. So it's like a bank where you mm-hmm. have a goal and you take that money out and you do it. So I remember getting into a partner when I was in high school because I wanted to go to Europe. So that was my first, you know, entree into saving with a group of yes. people, having a bank account. But I have to say, it's really helped me a lot. But my daughter, Sophia, who's 11, she's watched her mom as an entrepreneur. So her lens are skewed differently. So for her, it's about bake sales. She's had a bake sale lemonade stand since she was 9 years old. So this awesome. Year, her bake sale, she made 300 and change, right? Mm-hmm. And what she did with it was she loves Justice. So she mm-hmm. bought the parent company's Ascena. She bought stock in Ascena. She bought
awesome. Shares.
And then when Colin Kaepernick released that commercial, she bought shares in Nike. So her lens is different because she's under me. She's underneath.
Right.
So she's seeing how mm-hmm. to generate stuff. So I will say that is different. Now, Sebastian, hard-pressed to save. I don't know if it's because he's a guy, but hard-pressed to save. There is always an Amazon package coming to the house. So it's funny how...
All too familiar.
Mm-hmm. Children are, no matter how much you pour into them, you could give them the same exact recipe, but
correct.
Children are going to be different. You're going to get different things from each person because guess mm-hmm. what? Stimulation is different amongst everyone. So I will say, though, that in Jamaica... we are taught to save more than to love, correct?
I would totally agree. Totally agree.
What would you say is the best advice someone gave you as a woman, as a Caribbean woman? The best advice.
You must not fall in love. You must stand in love. I don't know if that is the best, but that certainly just came to my mind because, again, I think it really depends on your situation. And I go back to what I said earlier in terms of remembering being told that sometimes it's out of wants and sometimes it's out of needs. You know, love is an organic thing. And I really do think that love chooses us. We don't get to choose love. And it's not something you can really control and say, I'm going to force myself to love this person or I'm going to force myself to not love this person. So culturally, it's very interesting, like any other culture, you know, there's those love stories where people are a match made in heaven and they've lived a loving marriage for several years. And then you have other relationships that never quite worked out. So we get to see a gamut of different relationship styles. And at the end of the day, it's what works for you. Right. And certainly communication is key. I know that I heard that a lot at my own wedding, compromise, etc. But I think perhaps more so than culture, that some of those themes are very universal. Mm-hmm. But if we want to bring it back to culture, I think that, again, depending on the generation, our parents' generation was a little bit more subservient as the female to the needs of the male. Now it's sort of a situation where I think we're trying to teach our children to find a partner that you can work with, you know, find somebody you can build a life with. And if I think that the dialogue continues, I realize I think the best advice was that you need to find someone that you can really work with.
Yeah.
Because it's a partnership and you really do need to have one aim, one goal. Yes, you're two individual people and you will have your own separate lives as well. But certainly it's advantageous when a married couple are together, or even if not married, because that's, some people do choose that as well. But certainly once you've committed to each other and you love each other, then you realize and recognize that it's only for everyone's. It's a win-win if everyone works together. So compromise and working together and making it happen, whatever that is defined to you.
You're right. I mean, unfortunately, the generations before us, love was a luxury. They had children.
True.
love was a luxury. They had children, they had responsibilities, they came to this country, they wanted to, you know, make a better life, and they wanted to send for a sponsor their families and children to come. So we weren't really taught love, sadly, as that stated. As we get older, we learn what love is. We learn, actually, we weren't even taught how to love ourselves. So it's really hard to talk about love when people who are raising and guiding us are struggling or grappling with what self-love is or what self-esteem is, because all their life they've been told that a man comes first, or that you provide, or you cook for somebody, you take care of somebody, and then whatever little need you have, put it to the back burner. So I know that I'm proud that we're changing that dialogue amongst ourselves, how we value ourselves, but amongst our children, so we can, you know, end that generation where love is not even a factor in when you talk about getting married. It's like, what? Like, to Jamaicans, marriage is a contract, and marriage really is a contract. But seriously, for us, it's really a contract.
Right.
It's like, yeah, I could learn to love you. It's really an arranged marriage.
Yes, yes, in a lot of ways, needs and wants, absolutely. Needs and wants.
But I will say the best advice I ever got was from grandma, and it was like real simple, and she was like, you better have a pot to piss in. And you know what that means. Like, you better make sure that you take care of yourself, handle your business, because real talk, shit's going to change. And if you're left without a pot, you won't have any place to sleep, and you won't have any place to lay your head. So you better make sure you protect yourself. And that goes whether you have a job at Ford Motor Company, which no longer is Ford Motor Company, or if you have your own business. But whatever it is, handle your business. Save, save, save.
And I have to echo that. Yes, I do.
Right?
Yes, I do recall that. Yes.
That's what they told us. Forget about love. I mean, and I know it sounds so crazy now as a grown woman when you think about that, that we were not really taught to love. We were taught to be...
To survive.
But not only survive, Trey, we were taught that we don't want to survive. Like, every Jamaican I know in my generation, it's about thriving. It's about building. It's about, you know, changing the culture for the next generation.
Yeah, taking it to another level.
Taking it to another level, a better level for yourself. And when you peel back and say, I will say the one thing that I'm saddened by as a Caribbean woman is the fact that our predecessors, you know, our grandmas, our great aunts, some of our aunties, they never had a chance to enjoy life. They were, all they cared about was getting that pot to piss in, that they never got a chance to get a manicure, get a chance to go to a restaurant by themselves and have a glass of wine, or order the most expensive thing, or buy the most expensive thing, because to them it was frivolous.
And correct. So
even though they amassed things, they didn't know what it was to enjoy life. Yeah. And so I think I'm the opposite. I'm like, I'm going to enjoy this life because I don't know how long I'm going to be here.
And, okay. Right? I need to expand. I need to expand on that one. Here's another cultural one you're going to remember.
Right.
The good living room, you're not allowed to go into. The good place, you're not allowed to use. And I had to say to my mother, Aunt Shirley, I said to her, listen, when you're gone, nobody wants your things. Please use them. So as you say that, I said, I used to say to my friends all the time, when you come to my house, there is no room or no good china that you cannot use. You use it all. I want to make sure that when I'm gone, everything was used. Nothing is still in a package. Do you remember grandma and certainly my mother did as well, and I'm sure Aunt Rose did. They would, for example, always be prepared that in case you had to go to the hospital.
Oh my God, the good panty.
A fresh nightgown, slippers.
Oh my God.
I'm just like, Mom, we don't do that anymore.
Oh,
no.
Grandma would always have a drawer. Mm-hmm. The drawer was filled with underwear never used.
Touched. Yep.
Bras never used. And I would say, Grandma, why are the tags still on these in this drawer? And she would say, because if anything happens, good underwear. Or if I leave the house, I have good underwear. I said, Grandma, if they're good underwear, wear them.
Wear them, exactly.
Wear them. They never had a chance. Even my mom, like even to this day, I just went to see Crazy Rich Asians last week. And, you know, she's My mom is going to be 70 this year, your aunt, and even going to the movie to them, even though they do that more, it's like, it's still a drive out. It's still a big thing. You know, it's not like us, like, oh, I'm going to the movies, first run, first release. For them, it's a big to-do. It's a production.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I don't know how or when they will ever, they will never, because I feel like at 70, you're not changing who you are, right? You're not.
Yes.
So my goal and task always is just to live in the moment, because that is all I have. I take
absolutely enjoy what you have. Yep. You worked hard for it. Enjoy it.
You do the same, right? So absolutely. To wrap this up and to put this all in a nice box with a bow on it, what would be the best thing to you about being Jamaican?
Keeping it real, being authentic. I would also say always being on top, because I think as Jamaicans, we pride ourselves on being the best.
Yeah.
And it's not that we have to put a priority on being number one necessarily, but bringing your true best, always trying harder, always trying to beat yourself, good, better, best. You know what I mean?
Definitely. I would say for me, being Jamaican means not settling. And the same thing you said, because we know we come from good stock. We know we come from exceptional stock. And we could always trace our stock so we understand it and we get it. But most importantly, we know what it is. See, the thing about being Jamaican, you never afraid to get your fingernails dirty.
Never afraid.
You know what it's like to have nothing. Mm-hmm. And you know what it's like to have sinting. So, So all you care about is like, you know what? I'm going to get my fingernails dirty because I'm going to sit down and relax and enjoy this tequila. So
correct.
I would say the best thing about being Jamaican is being prideful, but never to the point where it compromises your livelihood, your security, your safety, or your family values. Because
humble calf suck the most milk.
Right? So what's your favorite Jamaican saying, mantra, or proverb?
Oh my gosh, there's so many.
Just one, Tracy, just one.
What is one? Oh gosh, I'm thinking of Miss Lou again recently. Rain a fall, but the dot it off. You know, honestly, like, there's just so many. So honestly,
What does that mean? Rain a fall, dot it off. What that mean?
You know what? So even though the ground is it's raining and the ground is supposed to be saturated, life is still hard and you still got to trod. You still got to keep going. You still got to keep pushing.
And I think that's the best way to wrap this up, that no matter where you come from, no matter what you were taught, you get another day to recalibrate and bring into your culture. Like we said, we were never taught love, but we embody it now with ourselves, with our children, with our families, with people we interact with and meet. And no matter what happens, yesterday's heartache or, you know, rainstorm, we know that the sun's going to come out. And that's the true test of being who you are, is just being resilient. I think as Black people, as brown people from the diaspora, I don't care if you're from Jamaica, the South, Haiti, we are resilient people. And don't let your past define your future. And if you know something is broke, fix it.
Right? If I may add one more saying.
Sure.
We come here for drink milk. We're not come here for count cow. Land of milk and honey, baby. We come here to drink milk. We didn't come here to count cows.
Right. We're not come to pause.
Yes, exactly.
We're not come to be a fashion model. We come to
enjoy
it and eat it, nam it, and take it to the next level. Well, girl, this has been fun. Thank you so much for this experience.
It's been a pleasure.
I love you, girl. I know we only speak on social media. We got to, or at a funeral or a wedding, but we got to fix that, right?
Absolutely. And I look forward to it.
All right, Trey, one love.
One love, all the time.
All the time, babe. Bye.
Hi, this is Karen Taylor Bass, and thanks for listening to my podcast on The Hub. Let's stay in touch. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at Karen Taylor Bass. And if you have any questions, feedback, ideas, hit me up at KarenTaylorBass.com. And if you really, really, really love the show, post a review and use the hashtag KTB Chapter 2. Peace.